It's a bit of a visual poem, so if you can see me, it's all better. It's called Silenced. Without a phone, I seem like a crazy person doing that. And it's against social norms. So when I stared the woman across the train out of it while doing that with no phone in my hand, she soon put hers on silent. And now we have Donald Malone.
Yeah.
A work in progress. It's a short story. This is just from a bit from the start. I just read a short bit from the start. It's written from the perspective of a German, and there's also a French person with dialogue, but I'm not going to do any accents. It's called, I don't have a title break yet. Let's start. I could start with the music, but no, let's start with the girl. She was sitting cross-legged on the floor, and wearing the baggy orange t-shirt she used as a nightdress. Emblazoned across the chest were the words, "Life is pain." She had curly blonde hair and green eyes, and her name was Anya. It was around 10 in the morning. I was lying on her bed. The window was open, but the blind was down because the apartment opposite looked right in. It's hard to do justice to the untidiness of a room. Let's just say that I only realized the carpet was yellow the fourth or fifth time I visited, or that once I picked a brassiere off the bedside table and ash fell out of the cups. Without explaining what she was doing, she had just spent 5 minutes rooting around the room. "I'm not going to my lectures this morning, and you're not going to yours," she had told me in a half sleep when I started shifting in bed at around 8. Eventually she found a loose CD wedged between a pair of running shoes. She put it in her portable CD player and a yearning tune came out. It sounded like a violin, the instrument Anya played. Sitting there cross-legged in her orange t-shirt, she began to tell a story. "When I was 12, my parents did up the spare room and started running a B&B on the side. One evening, I was on my way to the hot press to get a towel when I heard this music coming from the room. There was a Frenchman staying there. I can still picture him clearly, with his big eyes and bushy brown hair. I brought the towel to my mother and went back to my jigsaw. I was mad about jigsaws back then." "What's a jigsaw?" I interrupted. "You know, with all the pieces you have to put together to make a picture." "What do you call them?"
"Puzzle."
"Yeah, puzzles. Jigsaw puzzles. Anyway, I sat down in front of the jigsaw and picked up a piece and put it back down again. Before I knew it, I was tiptoeing down the corridor towards the guest room. When I got there, I sat down beside the door and listened. It was a few weeks after my dog Billy went missing. He was a border collie. "Did you ever have a dog?" "No," I said. "My father didn't like them. We had hamsters." All the same, you can probably imagine how I felt. I was 12 and an only child, and my parents used to fight all the time. They'd already given up hope, but I still checked the basket 20 times a day and screamed Billy's name up the fields and down the roads. On that day, sitting outside the Frenchman's room, I listened to the music and thought about Billy, really thought about him, and about him being lost. But at the same time, as strange as the music was to me, I really listened. I didn't know a thing about music then, but I understood that the second movement was a continuation of the first. And then came this unbelievable, well, wait, let I show you. She skipped forward on the CD. This, the start of the third movement, before the rondo starts. Since that morning, I've listened to this piece of music so many times that I can't properly tell you what my initial reaction was. It's more honest not to even try. But from my current perspective, here's what came out of the speakers at me. A long melody that is more rational, deep going, and satisfying than anything I've found on this earth since. My face must have reflected the pleasure I was feeling, because Anya's face lit up when she looked at me. In the dim room, there she was, beaming at me. White teeth, pale knees, an orange t-shirt. When I heard this, Anya continued, I knew Billy was dead, and that my parents would split up, and that I'd be okay. And all the fun of the rondo, all that confirmed my own strength. I sometimes think that my teenage years were so disciplined, all the practicing to learn the violin, because I went through an accelerated version of it during that one concerto. She skipped back to the slow movement, stood up out of the gloom at the foot of the bed, and leaped up beside me. Running her fingers through my hair, thinking back now, it seems extraordinary how affectionate she was. She continued her story. The next morning, I was laying out the breakfast things and whistling the opening theme when the Frenchman walked in. He coughed and smiled over at me. I'm sorry if the music was loud yesterday night, he said. No, I liked it. What did you like about it? I had to think about that. It's so clear, I said after a minute. Precisely what I like too, so marvelously clear. And here Anya did an excellent impersonation of a French person struggling with the word marvelously. You have a very good understanding, I think. He was gone all day and left early the next morning before breakfast. When I got up, I found an envelope with my name on it on the table and on the table in the hall. Inside was his cassette with the violin concerto on one side and the Scottish Symphony on the other. She went silent for a minute and the music filled the space. Her thick curls sprawled across my shoulder. She wriggled over closer and cuddled right up against me. And that's why I chatted you up the other night, she said, because you're German. I thought you said the guy was French, I said. He was. Mendelssohn was German, though. Of course, I said.
And next up on the mic, we have Deirdre O'Brien.
So I've been trying to write a poem about stained glass. And I've looked at a couple of stained glass windows and tried to capture the magic of them and found that there was so little in it. It was all just light and colour. And then the penny dropped. That the magic of it was that all that it was lacking, the build-up of layers of regrets or grudges, all these things are lacking in the stained glass. And so this poem is called Stained Glass State of Mind. I try to look at life each day through a window of stained glass, through eyes that at last found a way to let thoughts freely pass. No more for me the wall of stone, which justifies its right by ivy-gripped defences prone to block out all the light. Instead, wide open space to live, true colours to unfold, to give and to forgive, to hold and to behold. For each day is a sky so vast, I fill it as I choose, carry nothing from the day that's past, no greys, no pinks, no blues. Goodbye.
And now we have Noel King.
Thanks very much. I wrote this in 2001 in Cork McSherry on the weekend that Aileen Kelly, the storyteller, Shanachie actor, he did his final performance and he passed away about a month later. Wisdom, in memory of Aileen Kelly. Your lips are shapes of moons that light scenes from a past age, holding a century of a life. You could frame a mountain and take us to dreams of a world gone except for you. And when little parcels fall in our imagination's doors, waking in us a strive to storytell, we can hear your carry and we'll remember. The body went old around eyes of a carpenter's son who played Broadway and back, but too showed the cool carry of a Coolock Dublin suburban man. Wise man, wisdom is what I find in me, because you beam it from Kerry rafters, forged in stone, mad lore. We find in you our core. Thank you.
And now we'll hear from Kevin Griffin.
Rosspay Beach was already mentioned here this evening, and it's a favourite place of mine to go for a little think or a jog or just to be there. But one evening, something happened usually. We had a courtesy visit from an American ship, a warship, somewhere off the coast, and this happened. Just to inform you that the two fighter jets that skimmed the highest mountain and appeared from a twist in the nick of time over Dingle Bay on that sunny Saturday evening brought it to pass that the sands shuddered, the ocean hesitated as they swaggered nose to tail and shut off their mouths with the loudest bang heard in those environs since the Beagle. This one is called, and when I had it written, it struck me that it's slightly, but only slightly, autobiographical. It's called Riddling Insistence in an Original Voice. He never denied the imminence of 70. Indeed, looking forward with the pride of a survivor, that didn't make sense to me at first. The stomach, he said to me, was too weak, in spite of the sit-ups, whose number he never exaggerated. The routine of exercise was a mania. Most days he surprised himself in the euphoria of running. Never admitted using moisturizer. A vague irritation excused if he was rumpled. Old pangs resumed at the sight of lithe female shapes. This trespass excused as nature's plan. He reread a battered volume of Cicero, De Sinic Duti, I think, the one with Latin on one side and the English on the other. Sometimes he forgot trivia that always returned to mock him with their familiarity. No problem yet with important items. Thank you.
I'm not too sure if I'm going to be able to read this one out right. I think it says Mary Creedon. Someone Creedon.
I can never pronounce my name proper. I just read through Sharpen's Fenny. But where I come from, Nadurach is a great old kind of virtue, so I kind of my little rant about it. So, anti Machiavelli rant. So, Machiavelli has a lot to answer for. All capitulate to his big head, a paddy pack full of Mayfairs, all bordered by narcissus beds. For when their ends are out of proportion, they're not agile nor fit to earn means. But if their means are their only devotion, well then down spirals the start of their ends. So be careful of those little princes, those ubermensch of undivided spoils, their greed and self-aggrandizement, last but moments when no door conquers all. So that's my little point for that. And this is about being very bland, because see, I have all the good stuff at home, I don't read it at all here. It's way too kind of revolutionary, but anyway, I keep to very bland, safe little poems because I'm over in a certain age. So this is about being vanilla. So, oh yes, I am vanilla. A frothy cappuccino sort of girl. All froth and no substance. Tony Blair spin doctor used to say that. Perfectly acceptable and most suitable, a highly serviceable commodity is me. Like a sensible suit for the rain. Ah, but the noble savage dwells in every heart, and horrors visit all along the way. Keep that lid firmly clenched down on any vitriol. There'll be none of that old tosh on plain display. For Paddy Galvin's cuts through my heartbeat time with through the atrium with his little red knife. And Kennelly, with his cuddly, dimple face, sometimes speaks of eviscerating lovers during strife. So no, I just can't help but write of pretty things and of flowers and sweetness and delight. I have a tendency to tenderly address gentle feelings and delicious twilights. So one leaves the challenging, thematic, icy darkness. But then, happiness doesn't make for lasting art. Angst and vicious sides of life are all too real, I guess, but I'm PG for cream teas in my heart. So that's it.
And now we have Patricia Walsh.
Thank you. This is a novel which I recently completed. It's currently really high in the bestsellers chart. Yeah, right. It's called The Quest for Lost Era, and I just read out the opening pages. Dennis Ryan, the head of a new archaeological venture, Archaeological Research and Sites Excavation Limited, was irate, to put it mildly. This new archaeological company he was in charge of was no ordinary company. That he promised the bankers who provided the loans, and also the construction company Ross and Gunner who provided the money. This company was formed by the amalgamation of two most respected archaeological companies in Ireland, Archaeological Research Limited and Sites Excavation Limited, and was solidly backed with dedication, money and creative competency. What could go wrong? The problem that was the source of Dennis's anger was this. When he went into the compound, what he saw was something he needed, like a migraine sufferer needed trepanning. There was the maniac laughter of the sign writers ringing loud and clear. The acronym of the company spelled out, which surprisingly nobody suspected before, Archaeological Research and Science Excavation Limited, ARSE, Arts Limited. He stormed up to the van painter and roared at him, grabbing him by the collar. Well, Mr. Tourette, what the hell is this? Do you think it's a joke? Well, said the painter, extricating himself from the grip. You told me to write the letters on the vans, what more do you want? Dennis looked at the finished job with disdain, eventually throwing up his hands in his frustration. God, you couldn't have scripted this. What are we going to do? This is a bloody joke being called art, but we can't afford for you to do it all again. A company called art? At least they won't forget you anytime soon. He hurriedly turned a corner in the side office. Margot, could you dig out the latest CVs? I want to get staff started on the Ballet Bastard excavation as soon as possible. Well, she had to start somewhere, and she decided to start with Hegarty twins. The twins, called John and Paul, were what is known in the business as immature students. In a sense, they had finally got to college after being sacked from every bad job there was. Although they are diligent students, they are more at home philosophing in the college bar than scribbling away in the library. The studies in archaeology served them well, however, when, while working somewhere in the country, they would uncover miracles on site that exist in nobody's information but imagination but their own. Every time they walked past a stone wall, they innocently looked for molded stones, or when walking in the woods for coppice trees. They could not pass a ruined castle without a sigh of regret that the cruel hand of history had dealt these structures, whether it was through Cromwell or the Black and Tans. They could also convince anyone that the Emperor's new clothes were not just a PR exercise. So it should come as no surprise that archaeological companies should go looking for them at some point, especially since the twins had sent CVs to every company going, including Wars Arras Limited. Paul had just gone out in the shower when his phone rang. The timing could not have been better with John's chance to use his bathroom. Hello. Is this the Hegarty twins? One off. Who's calling? This is Margot from Archaeological Research and Science Excavation. You mean, no? Yes, defensively, yes, we know. I have a job for you too, if you're interested. Yeah, where? We're exploring an estate called in Ballybessar, ahead of the new industrial estate in room 666. You know where it is? He had heard at one point that there was a rude castle there. So I said, don't know where it is exactly. As I said, you take the route 666 to Ballybessar village and it's on the first turn right above that. near the site of the 119's cheese factory. Do you have your own transport? Paul didn't mention that his twin sold the car earlier this year in order to pay fees. There's a trusted in Royal Toyota Starlet that has bought off several careful lady owners, basically namely a group of nuns vacating their convent. He never missed that little vehicle as much as he did that moment, so it's answered, no. Well, shut in, Newt. We can arrange a lift with Greg and Sarah to go out in the monument at 7:30. Fine, is there anything in particular I need? All you really need is a builder's pointing trowel. And for God's sake, bring one no bigger than 4 inches. One of us bought an 8-inch trowel on site his first day. Are you serious? Yes, they're laughing still, and no gardening trowels either. I can't emphasize that enough. That's all you need for a moment. You can get the drawing tools later, when we get somebody to help you draw features. There's a pregnant pause. So, will you take the job? You might have to work on separate sites, although I hate separating twins. Yes. All right then, and the director's second girl will see you Monday. Yes, see you then, thank you. No sooner had Paul hung up than John had finished having a shower. He was somewhat nonplussed by his brother's sudden and bright enthusiasm, jumping and punching the air. What the hell is going on here? You know, Arts, the new archaeological company, they just offered us two a job. Really? Yes, they asked us to walk down Ballybastard, down Route 666. Woohoo! Wait, what kind of job is it? Excavation work, what else? What kind of site is it? Action, the brass. I don't know about you, but I intend to change the face of archaeology as we know it. How do you want to do that? With WHS trowel, what else? You're going to change the world with a bloody trowel? You don't even know what bloody WHS means, do you? Work hard and starve, yes, I know the joke. Don't think I don't read archaeology Ireland every quarter. So what? What do you mean, so what? This site can move mountains if they haven't done so a millennium ago. Kick a few academic asses as well. So alright, you don't know what type it is, but you're going to change the face of archaeology. You haven't even Googled what it is. Well, so what? This is what I've anything to do with it. We'll be more near an average archaeological site. This is a quest for information. This is a quest for lost era. John turned the corner into his bedroom, still dripping wet. Good luck, he snorted.
And now we have Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Colin. It was a very fine summer a good while ago, and in Alaska, I ran out of ice cream. In northern Scandinavia, the reindeer were dying of thirst. And we came down from the north through a town called Rovaniemi. It's the gateway to the Arctic in Finland. Santa Claus discovered it since, I think, for trips. But it was astonishing, the clash of cultures, the heritage and the new money and the curb crawling. I tried to several attempts to write about it, and eventually got something down on paper and sent it off, and I won the first prize at Mary Sharman's New Day. And it was the talk of the country. At a Munster final in Killarney, they were selling the cute killing and bottles of water, unheard of at that time. This was 1972. Rovaniemi, 72. 66 degrees 30 north, 25 44 east. Oversized, customized, slouched down street cars, transnational plates, lumberjack the lads, low profile alloys, hard men, soft tops, flat bed pickups, big bore chrome pipes, flat back, check it out, baby. Sonorous Harleys parade down the avenue, past good time seekers and onerous logs rafted up across a silver river, supercharged growlers, wide wheel arch dragster wannabes. Bystanders giggle at new wealth, old sport, copious tongues, just one body language. Newsflash, reindeer parched, Alaskan ice cream in short supply. Gazers and gazebos, backpack hikers, I heard it through the grapevine, lone prospectors, window shopper ladies, long haul tourists, for Norway vote no. Crawl around the Motown one more time, lap it all up, come on, let's party. Sundown is not for 2 months yet.
And next on the mic we have Charles Clark.
I thought we'd had quite a lot of prose this evening, so we could do with some poetry, if you can call it that, my group. The other side of it is that this is the subject of this particular one, possibly even the competition, is 6 years more recent. So I thought I'd read this poem. To Danny Brown, an installation. The spider's web of industry. In black and white, you created a cell. Now in your smart raincoat, you revisit from Washington, D.C., where you are, you say, living, living. And you bear away the evidence of an earlier existence. You leave our soft scene and return to the land of Varun and create your images in that special town.
We're approaching the end of the evening. We have a few more votes. We have Ed Cashman up there.
Hello. As you said, my name is Ed Cashman. Just a quick preamble. My first collection of poetry called Dead Heat is being published by Bradshaw Books quite soon. And the launch is on the 9th of May in the Civic Trust House. At 7 p.m. there'll be some guest speakers and a dance performance as well, so you're all welcome to come along. So so this is just a few a couple of slices of life from the collection. The first one is called Braille. This sudden voltage of connection is the glinting ripple of spokes despite the slow puncture that stretches the sinews of affection, melding in the harsh glare the persistence of our choices. This is the greenery of experience, like the tending of flower boxes, chatter by steamed pots of the bruised joys, rites of passion. These sands are like braille to our fingertips, rewritten by the salty inwash, while in the grey mounds of stratocumulus, gulls cleave their dominions. The next poem is like a snapshot of a bucolic 80s childhood in the country. And it's the title poem of the collection. Dead Heat. Honeymaker of jam jar summers, leap of flycatcher, and the terrier returns the stone. This freehand sketch of a dreamlike restorative townland of the new world is where you just are, jutting out like a headland to reap the wager of the imagination. A she-guiha whirls at the bottom of the acre. A ladybird towers on a green blade. By a pitched tent in a rising gale, there's a rumour of blight and swindle from chirruping hedges, sprung traps of itching powder, water pistol ambush, sting of baling twine on fresh fingers. Alchemical light of vanishing worlds. Bert, Fraggle, Enoch, Haggis, Maisie Maggot. dead heat and a headache on the hot back seat of a Sunday spin, slurping a 99. Cool canopy of the favourite tree, to spy mom or dad at the elephant's turn in a green car, and you scramble down the branches. Just one more for the ditch. This one is called She Stood in a Gleaming Raincoat. Slates glisten, the aquatic glow of reverie in dilated eyes, the flicker of our becoming through conversational shrapnel, the clean and pitiless world. There was a watchful rhapsody, grafted in nocturnal warmth, outflanked so we might fathom anagrams of loss, the wattage of a smile. So thank you very much. So I hope maybe to see some of you on May 9th at the City Trust House for the launch of Dead Heat. And if you want to go on the Bradshaw Books website and our Facebook page, there's also a video promo I made that will give you a sample of some of the other work. So thank you very much. Thank you.
And now we have Cedric Albeck.
A restrained thought, a discarded idea, another muscle opinion, a sacrificed perspective, a repressed intention, again, strangled conviction. Silence. Silence is golden, and gold is heavy, with potential or malice. Voices gain weight with it, so keeping it is not easy, as a load filled with prejudice. How much is a pause in a loud mind? A relief and a space. An opportunity to readjust the pace, decrease the noise of constant grind, warm the attention that chronic burning animation froze. Silence plates the talk, makes the humble rich, brings shaded inception under in light. Apply through and out, it will clear the pitch and allow the door to be bright. Do not doubt the message of dead air. Wait until it comes, enjoy the miscommunication. One's idea can be another one's order. Killing a thought may save or cause frustration.
Final poet cyber from Simon.
How much time have we got? Okay, this is a poem inspired by the song Father and Son by Cat Stevens, identified with first as a son and then as a father. It's called Father and Son. A constant challenge, no place to go, back to the wall, baying a resolute no. Consequence be damned, I've made my feelings clear. I don't care what's banned, just continue with nothing to fear. Somewhere private, questions must arise on both sides, staunch at their opposing poles. Standing in the other's shoes, you'd be surprised how easy is the way to satisfy each other's goals. Thank you.
OK,
Okay, this is one called Late Night Flight, and once again sit and talk to the limits of two shades of you, and in time fall back to comforting waves. A pair of battered comfy shoes, hardly in tune with plans or image, but a second skin. You say again they will not go, but think and mull, and say perhaps another day, and leave them till they fall apart, no longer fit. End of it. Thank you.
Right, that is the end of the 355th of Elves. Thank you all very much for coming out. Next week there will be an Icelandic boss who is looking very good. So, yeah, that's everything. Thank you very much, guys.